This is Twit.
This week, Apple released I'm in the old school, macOS Mojave.
There we go.
10.14. It is a grand tradition at Ars Technica. It was started by John Siracusa. Andrew Cunningham has taken it over since El Capitan to write the definitive, long-form, novel-length review of the new macOS. Andrew Cunningham has finally got some sleep. And he's joining us right now from Ars Technica. It's great. How long was your review?
The review's around 17,000 words total, screenshots and captions and stuff that got, you know, left on the cutting room floor. So yeah, it's a lot of stuff.
And John used to say at the end of that, he was just like drained. There was nothing left for a week. Like he just had to go home.
Yeah. That sounds about right. Like the first thing I do is get 8 hours of sleep for the first night in like 2 weeks. And then the night after that, I will go out and have a nice beer somewhere.
Wow.
Yeah. But I mean, your work is so unlike what we see on most of the YouTube culture.
Exactly right.
It's not an unboxing.
Shallow. It's in depth. And I mean, I know you start the minute they ship out the first beta. That's, you know, so you've been working on this for maybe 8 or 9 months. And then it comes out. But I have to tell you, I think everybody who really is interested in Macintosh, this is the must read article. You care most about what's Andrew going to say. Tell us about it. And I go through, look at this table of contents. I will go through the table of contents looking for details.
Wow.
And then I will download. I'm a subscriber to Ars Technica, so I'll download the PDF, keep it on my iPad so that I can refer to it. I mean, it is the manual that Apple doesn't write, basically. So thank you for doing it. I'm really grateful.
Well, you are so welcome.
I know you hear this a lot because it's true. So
that's the intent, though, is to try and be kind of a reference guide.
Yes.
I will go back to my old reviews because, you know, the day after it's published, I just have to push all of it out of my brain or I can't, you know, survive.
I was just going to say that. So much of this is this is not a first type piece of content. This is something that people will be going back to over the next couple
this
of years.
This is last. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I of course, immediately installed it like every good Mac user. The first thing you note is they give you a choice of light mode or dark mode. Let me open the system because I chose. Who isn't? I chose dark mode.
I think everyone's right.
Who's not going to choose dark mode? But you can. Light mode is the mode you're used to. Dark mode you choose. But the other thing I noticed immediately is they don't give you these great wallpapers right out of the box. I mean, they do, but they don't give you the best part of the wallpapers, which is that they change over time. So the next thing I tell people to do is go to that next system preference pane and choose dynamic so you can see the desert change. And as the sun goes down, the dunes get dark. It's kind of cool. It's a beautiful wallpaper.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I think there's no official way that Apple makes for third parties to make their own like custom wallpapers
That's
to do that.
Bad.
But I think people have already figured it
they
out.
Hacked it? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Anyway, dark mode gets a lot of attention. I guess we should say, do you like it?
I like it.
Is it good?
I do like it. Yeah. I mean, I default to dark mode mostly these days. The other thing that's in there that you might have noticed that I think is kind of neat visually is they have this accent color now. So since macOS 10 has like been a thing, the two color options have been, you know, you can have blue like scroll bars and check boxes, or you can have black and white like graphite.
So there's highlight color, which we've had forever. What is accent color?
Accent colors, so that changes.
So it's changing the control colors.
Right, yeah. So and you can, you know, pick different combinations in light and dark mode, and they all look pretty cool. I usually default to red or purple. I think those are the most, you know, you just have
That's
to show
you have
off
no
that you're
taste.
Using new things.
It's clear that gray is the only choice.
You like gray? You know, that's fine. You pick what you want.
But it matches my hair.
I'd like to send out a message to all the press who goes to tech events. If you're in a dark auditorium and you're using a Windows or a Mac notebook,
turn on
dark mode or turn on high contrast mode because I hate watching those bright screens. Dark mode actually does help quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. One thing I noticed, and I know we were talking about this on MacBreak Weekly, is that they don't offer you a different color for the text. And so when I look at San Francisco in the new dark mode menu bar, the text doesn't look quite right. It looks like it's like the thickness of the strokes are a little bit off or something. It doesn't look as good as the white. So somebody suggested maybe offering a lower contrast color for the text as well would be just for the next edition, Apple, just something.
Yeah, so, I'm sure like they tweak that stuff over the course of the betas, and I'm sure we'll see them keep tweaking it as they go. Like, I think even the light mode has some tweaks to the way that like translucency and things look. So
okay, good.
Yeah, they're always fiddling.
So. I didn't know about the accent, so thank you. That was a great tip. The other thing that's I got very excited about when they showed it at WWDC is the new Quick Look. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so when you like, it's especially noticeable, I think, on images and
maybe
the apps as well. But Quick Look is that thing where if you hit the space bar when you're highlighting any file, like on your desktop or in the Finder anywhere, it gives you those little. It just gives you a quick look at the thing without opening up whatever app would normally open it up.
And so I can do some editing now. I can do some stuff to this, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, so they. Right at that top level, they let you rotate stuff. And that is actually, like, it's not rotating the preview. It's actually changing the file. Like,
really?
the way it would if you were rotating in Lightroom or in preview. Right. And then same with these, you know, the crops and the markup changes and stuff. Like, that's all happening to the file. You don't have to open preview. You're clicking right there. The signature thing's kind of neat.
Like, that's cool. I could sign a document here, right?
Yeah, if you put in a signature, you can, like, you've been able to do it in preview for years, but now you can do it without needing needing to hop into another app.
That's
as I've freelanced, that's been super helpful for signing contracts.
There was another feature I really like, which is the ability to scan into documents from your phone or your tablet. Tell us a little bit about that. It seems like that's a part of continuity.
Yeah, so they call that continuity camera. Yeah. And basically any iPhone or iPad that's within Bluetooth range of your Mac. So it's using the same kind of technology that they use to power like handoff and the continuity copy paste thing that'll copy and paste text between two different devices. You can right click or go into the import menu. It depends on where.
Here I am in Pages right now, and there's a media icon on there. And down here it says Leo's iPhone XS, it says take photo. So now I'm opening my iPhone, and immediately it goes into the camera mode. I'm going to take a picture of you, Robert, because I think this document requires. And then it says use photo. And now watch, go back to my screen, because watch.
Oh,
it's in there already.
Is that not sweet? That's actually pretty quick.
That's not the best
picture.
That's pretty
neat. And you can scan documents like right to your desktop or, you know, right to emails. It's pretty cool.
I really think that's an interesting feature.
I've been using the Google Photos, but even that takes a couple of seconds.
Look how, did you see? It's instantaneous.
That was fast. That was really fast.
So preview, this new scan action, which I really like. Tell me about Stacks, because they made a big deal about this. I know a lot of people, no names, but whose entire desktop is loaded with icons, right? This is for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a feature. It's off by default, I think, but if you right-click your desktop or control-click your desktop and hit Use Stacks, it will look at all the different files you've got. So images, PDFs, like if you use, like I use Audacity to record audio a lot. So it sees those files and it groups them together into like these little smart folders that you can then, you know, collapse or uncollapse.
That is
to clean your desktop up. And you can sort them a few different ways. I think by date is by one.
Kind, date, last open, date added. Date modified, tags.
And if you're a big user of tags in the Finder, it'll sort by that too. So it kind of piggybacking off of stuff that people are already using.
I find the one thing
that it won't group together is folders. So if you got a lot of those on your desktop, like they're going to stay on your desktop. But for images and PDFs and screenshots and all that stuff that tends to accumulate over the weeks and months. Yeah, it's a pretty handy way to just visually clean things up and make things look better without making you do any actual work to clean it up yourself.
I like it because it's Apple saying, all right, we know you're going to do this. In the past, engineers would say, well, just don't do that. But Apple's saying, no, people are going to save to the desktop. Let's give them a facility that makes it a little easier for them to find.
They need to add a function to Stacks that will automatically stack things. Because I know people who have multiple desktops just filled with icons.
They will. This does that. It goes,
And I know it's a personal preference, but that drives me crazy. It's like,
I know.
People who have a browser that has 400 tabs open, that's the same thing. It triggers my OCD.
They've always had password capabilities. Oh, here's a demo of the... So this is your OCD friend.
Yeah, see, that I would kill.
Turn on stacks.
Feel better.
Is that
you.
Not awesome?
Thank you.
Although it would probably drive somebody who's used to those things crazy. What happened? I knew where everything was. Mom cleaned my bedroom.
On the next know-how, learn how to drive your Mac-using friends crazy.
Security is always a concern. Apple Keychain's been pretty good for generating passwords and storing them, but they've actually amped that up a little bit too. Right, Andrew?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So there's a new feature that will offer some automatic strong passwords. So I think by default, like developers can put their own password rules in, so it'll always generate compliant passwords. But I think by default, it's like 20 characters and has a mix of numbers and letters and dashes. It can when you're creating an account on a site, it can offer a password for you to use automatically. And then if you've got the iCloud Keychain stuff on, it will then sync those across all the different Macs you're using. So for anybody, like, it's not going to replace a password manager for anybody who's using one already, I don't think. But for people who aren't using one, I think this could be a replacement for that, or an introduction to password managers. And then the other feature that's kind of related is in Safari, they've got this new thing called a password reuse tracking, where if you go into the Safari preferences and then to the passwords tab, it will, there you go. It'll flag every single time you have used a password on two or more sites.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah. Classic things where you always tell everybody, don't use passwords, don't reuse passwords. But of course, everybody does it sometimes.
Yeah. On sites where I don't really care how secure they are, except I should be a little more, because look at all of these. Holy cow.
Yeah. It'll direct you to go to the sites and then change them. And then you can use the strong password feature to switch them
Very
up and
nice.
Fix it.
Very nice. Safari's been updated. This is Safari 12. By the way, we should mention that because they're now being a little stricter on extensions, people are starting to see some compatibility issues, extensions thrown out.
Yep.
We have a check scanner from the bank, and the bank sent us a note saying, don't upgrade! we haven't been able to figure out how to make it work with Safari 12. So be aware of that. There are a lot of reasons not to upgrade, though, right? Most stuff still works.
Yeah, most stuff still works. And if you're not an extensions user, or if your extensions come from the officially sanctioned sources, so anything in the Mac App Store and anything from the Safari extensions gallery, the stuff that's hosted on Apple's website, that'll all still work. It'll be fine. But anything from outside either of those sources is just totally gone off by default, can't turn it back on.
Wow.
No recourse. Like, good luck, everybody.
And I mean, that's the way it should be, right?
I'm torn. I mean, that's the way it should be maybe on mobile, but this is a computer, and I'm a computer user, and there's things I want to do. Gatekeeper's good, because Gatekeeper you could turn off. You could say, all right, I only want, my mom to download from the Mac's App Store, but I want to be able to download from third-party sites. This isn't a case where you don't have, there's no way out. You can't say, I want to turn off that feature because I have an extension I want to use from a website. I know what I'm doing. You can't turn that off. Now, of course, you can always use Chrome. So
right.
I guess you can in a way. But I don't know. I'm a little torn.
I mean, if you're going to be allowing these extensions to have extended access.
Which they do. Yeah.
You kind of have to make sure that the vendor is willing to put in the time to keep them updated.
Right.
So, I mean, I get it. And it's a huge harassment. Kerfuffle. I'm going to call it kerfuffle. It's a huge kerfuffle when it doesn't work, because we expect things just to work.
Well, that's why I'm warning people, because what happened immediately for me, for instance, I use uBlock Origin. Immediately, it was turned off.
Yeah.
I was able to go back out and find Gore Hill's extension. But at first, I thought, I have to use something else. I'm not happy about that. So that's something to be aware of. And our check scanner won't work. So I can't upgrade to Mojave on some of our office computers.
And it's going to get more restrictive. Like, I think for the next version of Safari, so whatever comes out next year, the plan is to disable the extensions gallery stuff too. So the Mac App Store will be the only place.
I got that feeling, because it threw me to the App Store. when I wanted to find it. It didn't mention that the extension gallery even existed.
You'll have to actually Google that.
You
have to keep one of your older MacBooks just to keep all of that.
Maybe.
And then this will be updated.
But, as you point out, Robert, the browser is basically the vector for most bad malware to get into a system. So that's the place
that's
where
the
you
cost
want the strongest
of having a
security.
Secure system.
Yeah. What about 32-bit apps? Can we still use these?
You can still use them. You will occasionally, I think, see a nag message that says, you know, your app is out of date. Please contact the developer. But yeah, this will be the last version of macOS that can run old 32-bit apps.
OpenGL and OpenCL also, which is a big deal.
Yeah, so they've been less clear about their timeline for that. Yeah. And functionally, those APIs have not been updated in macOS for years and years. They are pushing people pretty aggressively to use Metal instead.
This requires Metal. If you don't have Metal capability, and many older Macs that would be perfectly capable of running Mojave can't run Metal, you can't run Mojave. Right.
Yeah, so anything made before 2012 except for a couple of old Mac Pros that you can put a new GPU in. So but you do need to do that before you can run Mojave. So
APFS now on Fusion drives, that's a big deal. Can we use it on external drives, or is it still just the internal drives?
Yeah, you can use it on anything. I had it running on an external hard drive, just like a spinning hard drive that I've got. So
I know the Synology products support them.
So do we like APFS? I think it's great, but is the consensus it's reliable, it's solid, and it's feature rich?
People have really had no problems with the transition. I have not seen any widespread complaints about it. You know, I've not been all over the Apple support forum, so maybe there's some edge cases that I'm not aware of. But I think for the vast majority of people, you know, the transition's happened and they've not noticed, which is as designed, I think.
And as good as you can get, because as anybody knows who's been playing with file systems, there are plenty of, for instance, on Linux, file systems that are devastating. You can lose data and it's terrible. So to have this kind of transition to a good cache on write, you know, modern file system be so seamless, so transparent, and apparently so trouble free is really remarkable. Thank you, Apple, for doing a good job on APFS. And if you upgrade to Mojave and you haven't upgraded your internal drive, it'll probably do that for you automatically in most cases, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Including for Macs with spinning hard drives and Fusion drives now. So those didn't get upgraded last year, but they will now.
Nice.
Andrew, I got to cheat here and ask, is there something that maybe not a deal killer really irked you about the upgrade?
Boy, about the upgrade. The compatibility stuff does kind of bother me a little bit. I'm mostly using newer Macs, but I know a lot of people who aren't. And High Sierra is still going to keep getting security updates and Safari updates and things for probably two more years. They tend to support the most recent release and then the two releases previous. So High Sierra and Sierra now should still be getting patches. But when you look at Microsoft's approach to Windows, which is, you know, as long as I don't think their system requirements have changed all that much since Windows 7 or Vista
They tried doing it. They tried really closely integrating with the hardware, and there was a revolt.
They're the kings of legacy, and Apple traditionally is not. Yep. Apple's traditionally cutting people off so that they can move forward. I think one thing everybody's going to be so excited about is the new Stocks app.
Of course, we save the best for last. This is the real killer feature of the operating system.
They install two or three iOS apps? I guess more to show that you can do it than anything else. Nobody wanted Stocks on their iPhone. Now you got it on your Mac too.
They've referred to it as a preview of what is coming next year. So next year they're going to extend this.
That sounds more technology like a threat than a promise.
They're gonna let iOS developers take their apps and port them relatively easily to the Mac. So you've got. What is it? News, Stocks, Home, and Voice Memos, I think, are the four in Mojave.
Okay. Only Apple can do this, though. This isn't something any iOS developer can do.
Yeah, and it's still pretty rough around the edges. Like there are definitely places where you can tell that there are kind of iOS apps with a macOS wrapper around them.
Right.
And there are some questions, and I go into this in a little more detail in the review, but there are some questions about you know, can iOS apps access all of the underlying hardware? Can they access the file system in the same way? Like, what kind of things are they going to be able to do, and what, you know, still needs to be done to make them feel more Mac-ish and less like phone apps running on a computer?
Is this kind of like Android on Chrome OS? Is that the idea, just to expand the universe?
I think it is. You know, that's the most apt comparison, I think, because Microsoft has made a couple different efforts to make this happen. But with Chrome OS, I think Google's intent is to expand the number of apps that are available without affecting the core functionality of Chrome OS for anybody who's already using it and happy with it. So it should be mostly additive. We'll see, you know, what kind of changes they make. They made a lot of changes in the beta, even to how these apps look and work, and even how things like scrolling and font rendering and that kind of stuff work. So it's still pretty early. It's still really early to say, you know, what kind of new apps we'll see and what kind of capabilities they'll have. But I'm tentatively optimistic, I think.
It seems to me, and I wasn't using the public beta, but it seems to me all the Macs I've installed it on, effortless install, effortless upgrade. I didn't have to do a clean install. I was able to upgrade in place. Even on one machine, on my iMac Pro, which I had problems with the public beta, it went flawlessly. And I haven't heard a lot of cries of pain from users. Has this been a pretty rock-solid update for people?
As far as I've heard for other people, yes. For myself, definitely. Like, there were, in High Sierra, there were some rendering problems and some kernel panics and things that people were seeing all the way into the release build, where I don't think that's the case with Mojave. Like, it's the safest day one upgrade that they've done, I think, in a couple of years, which is nice.
And you compare this to the issues Microsoft's having with some of its big updates on Windows 10, the fall update and the spring update. This is impressive. This is really impressive. I think they've done a very nice job. There's a lot to like in this. Is there anybody who shouldn't upgrade to Mojave if they have a recent Mac that's capable?
I don't think so. I mean, you can make a case, I think, for waiting until, you know, one or two little point release updates have come out to squash any bugs or security problems that might have come up. Next year, the story will be different because, you know, the 32-bit app stuff is going away. OpenGL, OpenCL may or may not be there. There are a few other things that are going to get cut out just because Apple's, you know, kind of cleaning house and modernizing things like it always is. Back to My Mac is not available in Mojave anymore. So if you use that, maybe that's a reason not to upgrade.
But there are other remote access solutions. It's not like you have to have Back to My Mac. You can do
remote access. Yeah, yeah. I don't use that feature a lot, honestly.
I used to use it all the time. Yeah. I used to, but I haven't used it in a while.
I toyed with our version for a while, and no, I stopped.
Yeah.
Interesting idea, just bad execution.
Yeah. that's one thing people were upset about, that's gone. But, honestly, there are other choices out there, so it's not like remote access is dead.
Right. Yeah, they push iCloud as a partial solution, and that might work for some people as far as the file access thing goes. Like, these days, I don't find that I need to remote into my desktop at home use every single app on it, from a cafe or something. It's just not something that comes up a lot. So
that's one thing we have to remember. Yeah. Companies like Microsoft and Apple have lots of telemetry on what programs people use. And while we may say, well, how could they take that out? It may be that a dozen people used it.
You're one of 10
right.
that really wanted that program.
Right.
Sorry.
Hey, Andrew, as always, bang up job. 17,000 well-written words everybody should read. ArsTechnica.com. It's not on the front page anymore, but a Google search will give it to you real quick. You've done a fantastic job, and I thank you on behalf of the entire Mac user community. Andrew Wright.
Happy to do it.
On Twitter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, everyone.